Well, good evening, everyone. We have new faces and new old faces and everything in between, so I think we should do introductions around. But I want to say especially welcome to Don, who has been physically missing for a long time, but has always been a part of this little place with us. So glad to see you.
I'm Karin, Judy, Wendy, Ellie,
Dawn,
Jorge,
Steve,
Paul,
Ross,
Linda,
Roman.
And you all came down from Chicoche? Or are you just...
I live in San Jose.
You live in San Jose.
I just go up there on Sundays.
I see.
I'm a resident there.
Yeah. But one of the many who shows up on Sunday especially.
Yeah, we have small children. We have a family, so...
Oh, I understand. Mm-hmm. I did that too. Yeah. You compromised.
Two boys, right? You said?
Three boys,
that's right.
Yes. Yeah, you have
three girls.
We don't get to choose, do we? We're studying the Platform Sutra, a very ancient and essential Mahayana text. In fact, the whole of Mahayana is in a metaphorical way based on the teaching in here and on the experience of this woodcutter who heard the Diamond Sutra being recited. Even though he couldn't read, he was very moved by what he heard, that if you want to be to understand your life, you have to have no attachments. And he said, oh, there's something that's really meaningful in that. I'd better go and find out where they're teaching that. So he went a long, long way to find a teacher. And when he was finished with the teacher, he was sent away to become one himself. And these are his teachings. So we've come to the place where he's meeting various students, various people who've heard about him and come and ask him questions or challenge him. And this one, on number 41, this is Fata. I always like that name. Somehow that seems like such a, I don't know, fits somehow. It's kind of a fairy tale, so it fits in that sense of it. He'd been studying the Lotus Sutra, which is another Mahayana text that everybody should know. Everybody should study, and everything is based on those stories. It too is a fairy tale of many, many different stories, all saying one thing, that all beings are Buddha nature. All beings are Buddha nature. All beings are Buddha. But the stories are just amazing. And I always think someone should make a cartoon of them or drawings of all the different stories, because they're full of many, many different, very vibrant and colorful expressions. Fata said he'd been reciting this Lotus Sutra for hundreds of times. Koban said when he was a little boy, very little, I think he was 6 years old, his father was still alive. He was growing up in a temple in northern Japan. His father was an abbot there, of a long line of abbots going back hundreds of years in Japan. this beautiful ancient temple that's still there with its gorgeous gardens. And Coben was the youngest child, and he was sat down every morning by a nun who was training there. It was a training temple in those days. And the nun had a very, I don't know, there's a chopstick or some little stick. And she made him memorize the Lotus Sutra, which is about this thick in English. And I think it's about the same size in Japanese. He had to memorize it word by word, in the same kind of spirit that Fatah was memorizing it too. Oh, I have to take this in. This is very important. Every little boy should know the Lotus Sutra if he's going to be the son of the abbot of the temple. Coben always said he was pickled in Zen. Not always a good thing. It was a bit much, I think. Fatah said, "I'm bewildered as to the true teaching. And I have some questions about this sutra. I was hoping the master would use his vast wisdom to resolve them." The master said, "Fatah, the Dharma penetrates the depths, but not your mind. The sutra doesn't have any questions. It's your mind that has questions. You search for true teaching with a confused mind. But I uphold the sutra because I practice true mindfulness. All my life I've never been able to read." This is Sui Neng. "But if you read the Lotus to me once, I'll understand as soon as I hear it." And then Fatah read to him, and he immediately said, "The Lotus Sutra isn't that complicated. In the 7 folios contain nothing but lessons in metaphor. The reason that Tathagata expanded his explanation to include the 3 vehicles was simply because people are slow to understand. But the sutra makes it clear that there is no other vehicle than the one Buddha vehicle." Now, this is based on a story that is told about a burning house in which the children are playing. And they're so absorbed in their toys that the dad can't get them out. The dad is outside saying, "Come in, come in, come out, come out. You're going to burn up." And the children are finally attracted out, first by a goat-pulled cart, and then by another kind of vehicle, and then by an ox pulled cart. I've forgotten what that middle one is. But each one of them stands for a different way of practicing the Dharma. And then when they come out, and each one is sort of committed to their cart, then the teaching is, but there's just really one vehicle. There's just one way. And of course, this is based on how we naturally, as humans, are always separating things out and saying it's us guys and them guys. It's my way and not your way, or vice versa. So it presents the 3 different ways of addressing the Dharma as a personal thing, as a connecting with heaven kind of thing, and a bodhisattva practicing for the sake of everyone kind of thing. And what he says is they're all just one. So that's what the Lotus Sutra is saying in a lot of different stories, and that's what this is based on. He said, "Fatah, pay attention to the one Buddha vehicle. Don't go looking for 2 Buddha vehicles and lose your own nature. And where in the sutra are you going to find the one Buddha vehicle? I'll tell you. The sutra says all Buddhas and Bhagavans only appear in the world as a result of the greatest of all causes. How is this teaching to be understood? And how is this teaching to be practiced? Listen, and I'll tell you. When a person's mind has no thoughts and is fundamentally empty and still and free of false views, this is the greatest of all causes, which occurs when you aren't confused about the inside or the outside, when you are free of dualities. If you're confused about the outside, you're attached to forms. If you're confused about the inside, you're attached to emptiness. To be free of form amid forms, and to be free of emptiness amid emptiness, this is when you aren't confused about the inside or the outside. So, of course, Fatha was very interested in this. Wei Neng said an interesting thing further on. He said, once you understand, your mind will develop in an instant. But what does the mind develop when it appears in the world? It develops the understanding of a Buddha. Buddha means enlightenment. And this can be divided into four doorways: developing the understanding of enlightenment, manifesting the understanding of enlightenment, realizing the understanding of enlightenment, and entering the understanding of enlightenment. Developing, manifesting, realizing, and entering all begin from one place, from the understanding of enlightenment. When you see your own nature, you will appear in the world. He said, Fatha, I keep hoping that in their minds, everyone in the world will develop the understanding of a Buddha, not the understanding of ordinary beings. When people's minds are mistaken, they foolishly engage in evil and develop the understanding of ordinary being. And when people's minds are true, they give rise to the light of wisdom and develop the understanding of a Buddha. When you don't develop the understanding of an ordinary being, but understanding of a Buddha, that is when you will appear in the world. He said, your mind practices. It reads the lotus. When it doesn't practice, the lotus is doing the reading. In another translation, it says, you turn the lotus, but if you're not practicing, the lotus is turning you. When it doesn't practice, the lotus does the reading. When your mind is true, it reads the lotus. When your mind is false, the lotus does the reading. When you develop the understanding of a Buddha, you read the lotus. When you develop the understanding of an ordinary being, the lotus reads you. When you strive to practice in accordance with the Dharma, this is when you read the sutra. So that was great for Fatha. He was very happy to hear that. We recite before we read a sutra just what we recited before we read this sutra. An unsurpassed and penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. you that with every time you sit down with a sutra, you read with a depth of intention. It's not an intellectual exercise. It's an exercise of taking it in. So, Red Pine says a few interesting things about this, one of which is the greatest of all causes is the appearance of our own minds. He's repeating Huinen. The greatest of all causes is the appearance of our own mind. When we wake up and look up and look around, we're looking with just from this place, just one place. We can imagine many, many different places. We can pretend many, many different things. But the actuality is that we ourselves are what Alan Watts called the universe, looking at itself with our eyes, with your eyes, from your life. So Coben also spoke about this. He said Bhatta thought he had mastered the Lotus Sutra, but actually it was the opposite. His mind was turned around by it. You could say he depended on it. We do that in a lot of different ways, including, you know, many people, the Bible is so sacred and particular, and everything is kept in memory. And if it's kept with a mind that is trying to keep a self-identity going, it just means the sutra itself is turning the person. We work from the inside. We decide from here. So we can't depend on something on the outside. Ultimately, we have to depend on prajna, which is what we chant every time we chant the Heart Sutra. We depend on our own wisdom, because that's the reality of our life. He says, this sixth patriarch teaches that the Lotus Sutra doesn't tell many stories, but just one thing, one great event, one great matter. It was considered to be the most profound scripture, and he taught that it expressed the transmission of immediate enlightenment. The great event consists of the Buddha's enlightenment divided into four phases: to open, to show, to let us understand, and to allow us to enter. Buddha's appearance was to enlighten people, so he tried it himself. In the same way, other Buddhas tried to open it, show it, understand, and enter. And when they were enlightened, they were able to do it for others. Talk of one vehicle also tells about it. The sixth patriarch says there is only one Buddha vehicle, It is a kind of parable for one great matter, one great opportunity. It's why you were born, why I was born. At the end it says, to practice the way of the Buddha is no different from being a Buddha. This is a very natural thing. One could say Buddha does Buddha's thing, and it's happening. Rain falls, flowers bloom. That's the flower doing its thing. Man is always enlightening. That is doing human thing. I would translate this passage, that which is Buddha action, Buddha's doing, is Buddha. When something is blooming, it's a flower. When someone is stealing something from someplace, moving something which doesn't belong to him, this activity tells who he is. Our practice of Zazen is doing Zazen. You don't care about becoming Buddha. You are not climbing step by step into a holy person's world, like climbing a mountain from hell to heaven. A Rinzai master called it zapping Buddha's world. Zazen doesn't mean you go somewhere. So that's a lot of material. And maybe you have something to add or questions.
Who's Tathagata?
The Tathagata?
Yeah,
that's another word for Buddha.
Okay.
It's a very fancy word. It means thus come, thus gone. Both.
That second part was Kobe's way of saying that. I really appreciated that, the opening, showing, understanding, and entering.
And entering.
That was easier to understand.
Yes. Yes. And it's not a one-time thing.
That's what it was maybe.
Yes.
Cyclical.
It's a whole lifetime practice. It just keeps changing, because our life keeps changing. And so we keep coming back to the neutral place, to the place where nothing is happening. And then when we get up, it all begins to open up, flower in our own human way. Yeah. Paul?
Just how long is a kalpa?
It's as long as it takes for a heavenly being who flies, some sort of dakini, I imagine, with a gossamer gown, to fly by the Mount Sumeru, or a mountain like it, which is the mountain in the middle of the whole universe, to wear it down. When it's worn down, that's a kalpa.
100,000 million kalpas.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
A very, very, very long time. Yeah. Yeah.
I was given the number 15 million years. You ever heard that?
No, but
no.
I'm not surprised. Oh, I don't think it's a real number at all, but 15 million sounds good. Probably not enough.
Yeah.
Sometimes, many often use the how many sands in the Ganges. Countless, in other words, countless.
Yeah.
then the question, measurement of time, we can change that too.
Oh yes.
We'll play with that.
Yes. It's one of the things we sit in the middle of. It's one of the dichotomies that we live linear time, and we're marching along and going from birth to old age and to our end. But on the other hand, every single moment we're right here, right now. And there is no other moment. And that's the moment we experience in Zazen. And so it informs us of the balanced place. We're not just committed and wedded to the linear model that we carry in our minds, because we have an experience of another kind of time that is the experience of present moment. And our practice is about experience as well as trying to explain, helplessly trying to explain the untalkaboutable experience of sitting, which includes this mysterious presence that we are. We live both of them. It can be very confusing. One thing that was very helpful that I read today that Chogyam Trungpa said was that somebody asked him about grasping. He said, "How can I stop grasping at things?" And Trungpa said, "Oh yeah, grasping is really a big problem. But if you try not to grasp, you're just grasping at not grasping. So what do you do about that?" And then he answered his own question. He said, "You just don't have to, there doesn't have to be a self who is doing the grasping. There is no real self doing the grasping. So you can find yourself grasping at things and then realize that it's just one more idea in your mind. And one more way that you identify yourself as somebody and something and want to be, enhance it in some way, make it more special or better or tastier or something." We're always doing that. We're always sticking things onto ourselves to upgrade and keep the picture nice. But the truth is something very different from that. Now it's much more quiet and simple and modest and humble. Not special. Buddha. That's what Buddha means. Now it's time.
We have a 1 minute sit.
Do we have announcements?
Well, we could announce the Nehani Sashi.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Of the Jikoji, February 5th to 6 through 12.
It's a little shorter than usual.
I see.
It's Monday through Sunday. Through Saturdays. Well, whenever the 12th is. Late afternoon, evening of Monday to noon on the weekend, the 12th.
And Angie is the teacher, and Jikoji is handling registration and everything else. So you would contact them if you're interested in going. Or the week or the day, whatever. And we'll still be meeting here that Tuesday, the February 7th. And we do have, Carolyn has confirmed that she'll be able to join us as our teacher.
Okay. They're looking for a cook, if anybody's willing to be the tenso. Michael called me the other day. That's always the tricky part, trying to find somebody willing to cook for a room full of people. Well, let's have our 1 minute sit.